You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, where it's all about helping you grow your Denver real estate portfolio. Here's your host, Chris Lopez.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode. This is the fifth episode in our six-part series on the Investment Property Analysis course. So this episode builds upon the previous episode of tapping into equity of your primary residence in order to pull it out to go out there and invest in rental properties. So if you did not listen or watch or read that one, make sure you do before jumping into this episode. So a quick recap there is that this is real life people that live in Denver and some real scenarios and real numbers that we're discussing and running. I've just kept all the information generic because a lot of other people are in a very similar situation to them. So that previous scenario or that previous post, I should say, we discussed how to pull out the equity. Should they sell to maximize the amount of equity they're pulling out? Should they refinance it or should they keep it as a rental? So they reviewed all the results. We hopped on a call. We discussed it. We thought about it. We had another follow-up phone call and we made some tweaks. And this is a pretty normal process to go through when you're creating the long-term investing strategy or your real estate financial plan, is that you can't just sit down for 20 minutes, plug numbers in a spreadsheet, and then boom, you got your plan there. It's definitely in that typical process of, hey, get some ideas down. Let's think about it, walk through it, marinate on it, and just adjust a few times. So we did that, and now we are in part two of it, and here are the updates that we did to the real estate financial plan. So after reviewing the first model, their preference is to stay in their current house and to not move. So the difference between the numbers as far as like long-term rental cash flow to help them achieve their $5,000 and $10,000 a month numbers, the hassle of moving and all that was not worth the difference on there. So this is just balancing their investment goals with their quality of life as a family. So they've decided to stay put in their home, but they will refinance their property in order to pull out equity to go out there and invest in properties. So for these updated scenarios that we're about to go through, here are the updates we did. I'm actually going to use a lower cap rate rental property. So this will be give us more conservative numbers. So this means it's going to be a more expensive property for the rentals than what we were running in the previous property. So going back, I can't remember if I gave a cap rate in the previous property, but the rentals we were buying were at a 6.3 cap rate. In this model, there'll be a 5.8 cap rate. So that's a total, you know, half a point cap rate down. Now, can we go out there and find a 5.8 cap rate today in Denver? Yes, no problem. Can we go out there today and find a 6.3 cap rate in Denver? Yes, no problem. But we wanted to run a little bit more conservative. And they're also bouncing idea around of maybe buying a small multi-unit with this initial chunk of cash they have. So rather than buying, you know, three or four individual properties, they may just buy one property. And as you probably know, multifamilies are seeing lower cap rates in Denver than condos and townhomes are. So I wanted to lower the cap rate just to give us a little bit, be more conservative. And, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years out, cap rates may be getting compressed. And just so you guys know, when I run those cap rate numbers, I think they are fairly accurate and pretty conservative. I'm not using, you know, 0% vacancy, 0% repairs and maintenance. We're using kind of the market averages right now and industry standards. So I'm not juicing them to try and make them look really good. And plus, these also include the property management fee. These clients, like many of my clients, they want to hire a property manager because they are busy with their jobs, their businesses, their family, and they want to hire a professional to handle the day-to-day stuff for their property. So these are, I would say, pretty conservative numbers here. And if you are looking to self-manage or even maximize cash flow, you can definitely find higher cap rate properties. But this will give you a good comparison here. And it'll be interesting to see how much does a half a point in cap rate impact a long-term investing plan. Additionally, here in the very near future, they will be able to increase their monthly savings rate by about $1,000 a month because one daughter is no longer in daycare. The way I like to put it is now they're getting free public daycare from public schools, which is probably, I don't know if people appreciate that joke or not, but from a pure financial standpoint, I mean, that's what it is. If you guys have kids or know people with kids, daycare is expensive. And, you know, fortunately for them, one of their daughters is old enough now to where she can now go on to public schools and they can save that money in daycare. The one last item we're doing on here is that we are going to refinance their primary. And so they are open to refinancing their current and future rental properties if pulling out equity in the future can help them get that goal quicker. They're up for it. But I'm not going to run any scenarios on refinancing their primary residence beyond this initial refinance to pull out the cash. Won't go all the details, but it just basically doesn't make a whole lot of sense to look at in the future, because by the time there's enough equity back in the property pulled out, we're probably going to be 5 or 10 years down the road. And I know one of their goals, too, is that while they're accumulating rental properties, they also want to start paying off their primary residence for retirement reasons. And going into other details, a lot of times you're not going to get this huge equity pull up from your property again. Of course, you can keep an open mind to it, keep it on your list to look at, but we'll not be running those models or those scenarios in this model today. All right, so going back to our starting assumptions and then walking you through the four scenarios that we will be running. Their total starting cash remains the same from the previous episode, about $166,000. And remember, this is coming, about $111,000 of it is coming from their 75% cash out refinance. And then also from the $55,000 they have saved up just from their current capital and their personal savings rate. Now, in the previous episode, they were going to have about a $1,900 a month savings rate. Now that's going to be $2,900 a month, because they'll be saving about $900 a month from the difference on their old mortgage of 15 years to now their new mortgage of 30 years on their primary residence. They're already able to save $1,000 a month for real estate investing. And now with the daycare savings, it's another $1,000 on top of it. So here are the four scenarios we're going to discuss. The first one is basically the winner from the previous scenario, and that was one titled Refinance Primary and Buy 10 Rental Properties. And the model we ran on there was they refinance their primary, they use all their starting cash to go buy the 10 rental properties, and they're buying them at the higher cap rate of that 6.3 cap rate with that $1,900 a month in savings. So all I've done this scenario is renamed it to scenario number one, refi primary, buy 10 rentals with a $1,900 a month savings rate and 6.3 cap rate rentals. So reading these titles will get confusing. That's why I numbered them scenarios 1, 2, 3, and 4 to hopefully make it a little bit less confusing while you're listening to this. But that is basically the exact same scenario from the previous one. I put it in here just for comparison purposes. The second scenario is the exact same thing as the previous. We're keeping the higher cap rate rental properties, but all I'm doing here is increasing the monthly savings rate from $1,900 to $2,900 a month. And I did this because I wanted to see, I was just curious myself, hey, if we're keeping the rental properties the same, as far as like the metrics on there at a 6.3 cap rate, if they're able to save $1,000 more a month, how do those two compare to each other on just that monthly savings rate? Number three is now taking in the same concept, refinance your primary, buy 10 rental properties, but the two adjustments are the increased savings rate from $1,900 to $2,900, and now a decreased cap rate. We're going from that 6.3 cap to a 5.8 cap to run a more conservative model. Now, the fourth scenario is where we are going with that increased savings rate of $2,900 a month, a 5.8 cap, so that lower conservative cap rate. But now I programmed the real estate financial planning software to go in there and refinance rental properties when there's enough equity in there, so then go out there and buy the next property. So let me walk you through the logic on this one, because it's a little bit confusing. So the overall logic for all these models says basically, we are going to take the starting capital we have of that 166. We're going to take the monthly cash flow from our personal savings rate and the cash flow from the property. And every time there's enough money in that bank account to go use as the next down payment plus all the closing costs to buy the next rental property, we will do that. Now, a little couple more details in there. All these numbers are going up with inflation or the metrics we put in there for the property. So our appreciation, rental assumption, inflation rates. So every month, those prices are going up and the software takes in all that into account. Plus, I'm requiring it to leave a minimum of $25,000 in today's dollars in the account as just a buffer and to make sure that we don't go get anywhere close to zero on the account as just a little bit of buffer of, emergency fund or unexpected expenses fund. Because if you heard me in the past, you know I'm a big, big proponent on cash on hand to help with that. So all the scenarios follow that logic. Now, what this fourth scenario where we are potentially refining the rental properties, it's going to look at after we start buying properties and maybe there's $30,000 saved up in the current investing account, but then says, oh, there's three other rental properties over here that have $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 in equity. Oh, if we take the current cash on hand and then pull out equity from these rental properties, will the cash on hand plus the refinance cash proceeds from the refinances be enough for a down payment and closing cost on the next rental property? If yes, let's go forward and refinance those rentals so we can pull out the money and go buy the next property. So this goes back to what we've been talking about the last few episodes where we have equity trapped in the property and as your real estate piggy bank, let's pull that out and see how that impacts us in accumulating properties and also what it does to the cash flow. Now, when I ran those rental refinances, I assumed a 2.5-point closing cost for the refinance. So that basically means 2.5% of the loan balance as far as closing cost. And people might say that's high, some people might not. I went on the higher side because the majority of people right now that are refinancing rental properties are actually, buying the points down to get a better interest rate. So I went a little bit higher, assuming that we're going to do some point buy down. So I'll discuss more of this as we go on, but that's the number I used in there. And if I want to be more conservative, I've probably put in there, a 0.5 or 1 point if you want to do 0 point buy down on there. So hopefully I didn't lose you on there. Again, we got these four scenarios we're going to run through, and we'll discuss each one in terms of achieving the $5,000 a month goal and that $10,000 a month goal, and then plus just some commentary and comparison since these four scenarios have some variables that we can isolate and discuss. All right, so jumping into the first results for achieving that $5,000 a month in income. Now, keep in mind, when I say $5,000 a month in income, we're not going to achieve that today. It's going to be quite a few years down the road. So what we really want is not $5,000. We want the equivalent of $5,000 today in future inflated dollars. Because as you guys know, a dollar today is worth more than a dollar tomorrow because of inflation. So out of those four scenarios, if you can remember those names, which one do you think will be the best performing one? Scenario one, which is a winner from last one, the $1,900 a month savings rate and at a 6.3 cap rental. Scenario two, with the increased savings rate and the same 6.3 cap rentals. Scenario three, the higher savings rate and the lower cap rate rentals. Or scenario four, the higher savings rate, the lower cap rate, and plus refinancing future rental properties. So the scenario that gets us to the goal first is actually scenario number two, which is the increased savings rate and buying the better cash flowing rental properties at the higher cap rate. So that will take 6.4 years, and that'll be about $6,100 in dollars in the future to give us $5,000 today. The second one is scenario one, which is the original savings rate and the original 6.3 cap rate rentals. That's 7.4 years. The third winner, or the next one, I should say, is scenario number three, which is the increased savings rate and the lower cap rate rentals. That's at 8 years. And the fourth one is actually scenario number four, which is the increased savings rate, lower cap rate, and then refinancing your rentals at 8.4 years. So the winner, in terms of what gets you that cash for the quickest, is a second scenario of the increased savings rate and the buying the better performing cash flow rental properties. And that was my guess here as I put this together and while I was waiting for the system to or the software to process all this. That was my guess for the rental, the winner right there, just because we're buying better rentals and we have a higher savings rate. I thought the rental refis, I was really curious to see how that play out because that's kind of a wild card there because I just can't mentally do the math as to how that would perform. But I didn't think that would win on this one because if we're refinancing properties, that's going to increase our debt load and might minimize some cash flow in the near term, but maximize in the future. That was my thought process there. But to no surprise, the higher savings rate and the better performing rental properties was the first scenario. But in the grand scheme of things here, the range between these four scenarios is 6.4 to 8.4 years. So it's a two-year difference, which is not a huge number when it comes to doing some real estate investing for retirement planning purposes. And we're never going to be able to model exactly to that 1 month. Hey, if you buy all these properties now and assuming all these market conditions for the next 5 years, you're going to achieve it in year 6.2. We just don't have that crystal ball to do it. So when I look at this, I see them pretty closely clustered together. To me, that just says, great, I should just move forward and do it because every year I'll be reviewing my plans, reviewing the market conditions, reviewing my current rental properties to help make sure I'm on track and adjusting the plan accordingly to all these different variables going on. So if we're in there between 6.4 and 8.4 years, I would consider that a win because that's not too far in the future. And all the four of these scenarios are pointing towards pretty similar time frame results. Okay, now the result I'm more interested in is that $10,000 a month goal. So same thing, we took all four scenarios and said, hey, what's going to get us that $10,000 a month goal? And we want the future dollars worth $10,000 a month. So it's taking account inflation as it accounts for these properties. So I'm going to read these off. And actually, I'll just read them off in the order as to which one gets you there first. So the winner is scenario number two, which is that increased savings rate and buying the higher cash flowing rental properties. So this is the same scenario that won the first scenario of getting to $5,000 a month. The second winner is the scenario where you're actually refinancing your future rental properties, and that's at 14 years. Scenario three, which is the higher savings rate and the lower cap rate, is 14.1 years. And scenario one, which is the original savings rate and higher cap rate, is at 14.3. So those last three are all within a couple months of each other. It's 14 years, 14.1, and 14.3 years. I would say they're all about the same because modeling this stuff out 14 years from now and are off by like 4 months from each other, yeah, that's going to fall within the acceptable limit of, yeah, we really don't know the big difference right there. If you do either three of these, it looks like you should be good. Now, the winner by about a year and a half is that second scenario of buying 10 rentals with the increased savings rate at the higher cash flowing rate. So my expectation for this $10,000 a month goal was going to be either scenario number two with a higher savings rate and better cap rate properties, or scenario four, which is the higher savings rate, lower cap rates, but refinancing future rental properties. In my mind, I was basically, it's going to be a coin toss as far as what I could guess as to which one will be the winner. And it's going to be that second one, according to the software, that's going to go out there and get you there the fastest. Now, I want to dive into the whole refinancing rentals here because this kind of goes down a whole different rabbit hole, which opens up a whole different can of worms in terms of variables. So let's talk about that for a minute, because I think modeling it out, it has its pros and cons, but definitely has a lot more variables on there that we need to discuss. So refinancing the rental properties does actually get you to those 10 rental properties the fastest. So in terms of just what scenario accumulates those 10 rental properties the fastest, it's refinancing those rental properties. So scenario four, refinancing your rentals gets you that goal in 3.4 years. Those other three scenarios are between 5.5 and 6.6 years. So, you know, about, you know, 2 to 3 years longer than refinancing those rentals. So from, you know, the first thing we often talk about when it comes to achieving that goal is that you need to accumulate the properties the quickest is generally the best path forward to achieving the goals here. Now, when you're refinancing those properties, that actually can change it because you're refinancing those properties and you're often increasing your debt load as well, which can change the monthly cash flows from those properties as well. So from the standpoint of what accumulates the fastest, the refinancing the rental properties is by far the clear winner by about 2.5 to 3 years over the other scenarios. But here's the interesting thing. You accumulate those properties a lot quicker, but in terms of your total peak mortgage debt, you actually have the highest total mortgage debt with that fourth scenario. When I say the highest mortgage debt, this is just looking at the total debt between the whole time you own these properties across all four scenarios. It's saying, okay, at the very highest point, which one has the most debt? And I'm giving you these numbers. I ran it in inflation-adjusted dollars, since they're all going to have different time, you know, years and months as far as when each scenario peaks in total mortgage debt. I put it in inflation-adjusted dollars. So as we discuss and analyze it, we can do a little bit more apples-to-apples comparison. So if you refinance those rental properties, your peak mortgage debt is about $1.8 million. The other three scenarios range from about $1.4 million to about $1.5 million, so about $300,000, $400,000 less in total peak mortgage debt than that refinancing your rental scenarios. All right. So now since I've given you some context on there as far as how fast we accumulate the properties and your total peak mortgage debt, I want to talk about a couple important notes when it comes to running these cash out refinance models. So as I said earlier, I'm assuming a 2.5% cash out refinance expense. Now, I think that's on the higher side of what the cost could be. And I put that in there because many people, when they refinance, they are buying their interest rate down. So let me ask you this. What are those real rental or those real costs and their interest rate buy down at a future time in a future interest rate environment? Well, that's where it gets really hard to model. And every time you do that, you have to look at each property in context of, hey, what's the cash flow? How long do you think I'll have this loan for? Oh, what's the current market? You know, like I say market, like what's the current bond market like in terms of buying rates down? Because interestingly enough, you know, it's not always the same cost to buy interest rates down. That has a huge, you know, that is determined by the back end model as far as what the finance companies are doing with taking your debt and selling it off the bond market. As far as, hey, great, buying the interest rate today cost you this much, but buying the future cost you this much. So that's stuff that we just can't model and that we just don't know. So again, I ran the higher side of a 2.85% interest, 2.5% cash out refinance to take into consideration some of those buy down costs. Now, if we did a 1%, that would save us some money every time we refinance the properties. Because when I say 2.5 points, that means 2.5% of the total loan balance. So if I'm running it at a 2.5 points, that's $2,500 per $100,000 in loan balance. Or if it's a 1% or 1 point, that would be a $1,000 per $100,000 in loan debt. So the $1,000 here, $1,000 there across a few properties done a few times, well, that can add up to $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, depending on how many times we are modeling these cash out refinances. And so the way I programmed the software is I said, this is the logic I used. Look at refinancing the properties anytime the equity is below that 75% loan-to-value threshold. Because on rental properties, the general rule of thumb is that you can never do a cash-out refinance with anything less than that 75% loan-to-value threshold, meaning that you need 25% or more of equity in the property to go out there and do a cash-out refinance. So after I ran all the scenarios and I was really digging into all the details on this stuff, I started digging into, you know, line item by line item as to where I was getting the funding on this fourth scenario, because I was really interested in how it all worked out. So an interesting thing I saw was that a few times it refinanced five rental properties where each property had $10,000 or less in available equity, so it could pull out, you know, $30,000 or $40,000 to go out there and buy the next rental property. So in real life, doing cash out refinances when there's so little cash or so little equity pull out on a rental property, a lot of times it doesn't make sense to do it in terms of the time hassle and the expense or due. Because every time you do a refinance, you have to go out there and hire an appraiser, fill a bunch of paperwork, redo closing costs, and all that takes time and money. And from my experience and working with a lot of clients on here, to pull out $10,000, basically the juice isn't worth the squeeze, to use a very, you know, basic metaphor. But the way the software logic was programmed in there, anytime there was enough equity, and looking at all the equity costs, a few rental properties, it would pull it out. So there's even one time where there was like $6,000, $7,000, $5,000, $4,000, $8,000 across, you know, five or six rental properties, and it refinanced all those to pull out a little bit of money to go out there and buy the next rental property. And I'll say this, this is one of those limitations in the software, and probably actually more as me using the software, because I am by no means an expert on there. But this is just one of those things that you have to keep in mind as you run models, is that it gets really difficult to program all this logic to handle every scenario 5, 6, 10 years down the road. And that was where I saw in this model, I was like, now in real life, we probably won't be doing it just because it's not worth it. But hey, if there's a couple times where there's a big equity build in there, that's what we would run through what we talked about in the third module on return on equity. Let's plug it in there, see if it makes sense to keep it as is, to refinance, or to sell and 1031 into more properties. All right, so to kind of wrap these notes up here, give you a few concluding bullet points on here. Actually, going back to the cash out refinance, the points I just discussed, does that mean you should not do a cash out refinance? No, it doesn't. As I kind of just said, that's the partly limitation of just modeling it, the software, and probably more about just my ability on using the software. But the punchline here for me is that you cannot blindly follow models. But seeing how fast we are able to accumulate those 10 properties, it just reinforces what we've talked about in some previous episodes, that every single year, you should be reviewing each property and the amount of equity you have in each property to identify those equity opportunity costs to see if, hey, you're going to keep it as is, let it ride out for 1 year longer. Are you going to refinance it, or are you going to sell it to go up there and trade up into more or bigger rental properties? Now, kind of taking a step back from the overall picture here, there is not a huge difference in timing in terms of achieving those goals of $5,000 a month or $10,000 a month. So plugging the models here, you know, I'd say it's kind of like the point of diminishing returns that we can run all these little detailed scenarios. But the fact is that they're starting out with a big chunk of cash from their cash out refinance, you know, $166,000. They have a really good monthly savings rate of $2,900 a month. And those two things are going to be the most important factors in them accumulating their properties. And then trying to model out how things look in years 5, 6, and 7 are really hard to do, because everything will change every year. And that's why reviewing everything, sitting down with me every year to review numbers, that's where it makes sense that we can always adapt our plan to what the market is doing. But bottom line is that initial starting capital is a big reason we're seeing success in 5 to 15 years in achieving these models. To use a metaphor, I'm pretty sure most people out there have read those, you know, Money Magazine or Forbes Magazine articles where it talks about using a 401k or an IRA for traditional retirement planning using the stock market and bonds. And it runs those models of saying, hey, if you're in your 20s and you put, you know, $10,000 a year in your 20s, you'll have this much by the time you're 35. Now, if there's a 35-year-old person with $0 and now they're starting to contribute to their retirement plans, they have to put in, you know, four times as much as you did just to play catch up with those 10 or 15 years that you had in terms of just time in the market and that compounding effect that happens in the stock market. Well, it's the same concept here when it comes to real estate investing, because when you really look at all four ways that you can make those four returns, you make money in real estate, not just cash flow, but the cash flow, appreciation, debt pay down, and tax benefits. The sooner you start getting those four returns and the sooner you start potentially repositioning the equity to go out there to trade up or use up to buy more properties, that is the same thing as compounding interest in the stock market. The more time you have in the market, the better you are. So every model I've run, everything I've seen, it's not about timing the market, but it's about time in the market. So a big reason these models are working out so well is because they are comfortable with, you know, refinancing their primary residence, pulling out a big chunk of money, and then using that to basically go out there and buy, three or four units or rental properties here in Denver. And that's going to give them a big bump up. And that way they have more cash in the market. They're making more overall returns and it gives them more options down the road, more cash flow to reinvest. And it kind of just starts that snowball effect, or it gives you a bigger snowball initially as that snowball builds every year and year and year. So from all this, personally, I would, move forward with doing a cash out refinance in the primary to start the process, not get too worried about all these little details, because the model shows that saving some money every month, reinvesting in cash flow, but taking that initial cash to go out there and invest, that's what's going to make the difference. And beyond that, every year we'll just review things and adapt to the market. And I can tell you this, the clients that I ran these models for, they are doing the cash out refinance and their plans to go out there and start buying properties with it, which is exactly what I would do. All right. So if you got any questions on this episode or these concepts, definitely reach out to me. You can email me or you can go to the blog post and type in comments on there. I'm happy to discuss it. The blog post also has the graphs, and all the tables with the returns and numbers and exact timeframes and dollar amounts as far as when it happens. But I wanted to do my best to describe this to you because I think it's a really interesting concept and helps you kind of find that right balance of, hey, let's get all these details. How much details do we need figured out versus, hey, that's a lot of variables in the future. Here are the key variables to focus on today that we can do that'll set us up for the future. And as I've said numerous times, that's doing the cash out refinance, and that's them having a discipline to go out there and do monthly savings rate. Those are the most important things, and every year we will review it. So if you got questions on this specifically, reach out to me. If you got questions on creating your own real estate investing strategy, reach out to me. If you have questions on how to go out there and analyze a property, whether it's a new rental property or one with existing equity in there, reach out to me. You can email me or go to the website and click on investment consultation, and you can send me a message to the website that way as well. And make sure you check out the next episode in here, because that's going to be a case study on a cash out refinance that I just completed my own primary residence. So I'll go through the numbers on there, some options on there, and talk about why I picked the option I did, and then how I'm going to reinvest the money and turn that cash out refinance into more wealth and more cash flow for myself down the road. All right, well, thank you for listening, and I'll see you on the next episode.